God has really blessed me. You know, he let me work in D.C., let me work with EIB in Hollywood, in Silicon Valley. And he's shown me through all those experiences that there is one problem and one solution, and that's why we do this show.
Welcome to A Disciple's View with Todd Herman.
When the God of the universe created the world, he didn't snap his fingers or wink his eye. The Lord spoke, said, "Let there be light." Because we believe, we speak about the happenings in this world, mindful that our true home is with Jesus Christ and his kingdom. I'm Todd Herman. Welcome to A Disciple's View. I don't remember President Trump, when he ran for office the second time, promising fascinating, dramatic times. But we are seeing fascinating, dramatic times. And it's not the drama to which most Americans have become accustomed, or let me rephrase that. It's not the way most people have been programmed. There's a lot of programming of Americans. And frankly, there's a lot of programming of citizens of the world. And the programming is this. Our betters have it all handled. They all agree. There is a unanimous voice. Ukraine is the most important country in the world. Always has been. There's a unanimous voice. What you exhale is killing children. Carbon dioxide. There's a unanimous voice. Stay home, stay safe. Right? Not true. It's a drama. It's a stage play. The stage play is put on for us because in the eyes of Washington, D.C., and all most world leaders, bosses, we're stupid. Much more dumb than they are. And so we can't, in the words of Jack Nicholson, handle the truth. And so they put on stage plays. See, what happened in the Oval Office between President Trump and Vice President Vance and the dictator of Ukraine, Zelensky, happens all the time. It happens every day. People disagree vehemently. And it happens every day in Washington, D.C., that there are cursing sessions. I've been in them. I've sat in a room at the National Republican Senatorial Committee simply presenting new tech to a team of tech people who loved what we were doing and wanted to work with us. When one of the higher-ups walked into the room and started tossing F-bombs at me. And sat there and listened to it and said, "You know what? I think that's the last F-bomb I'm going to hear from you." And thanked the tech people for their time and left and did some investigation later. Yeah, he was on the board of a firm that our technology would have eaten for lunch. That's okay. That's D.C. Americans and citizens of the globe have been consuming drama. All the disagreements behind the scenes with these world bosses, and they all come out and do their photo sessions together. Well posed. You remember, of course, when figurehead Biden started to wander off from a photo session. And later CNN and MSNBC and NBC and CBS all said, oh, it didn't. He wasn't really wandering off. Someone called it a cheap fake. What we saw in the Oval Office was real. And Americans are sick of pretense. It's related to everything. No one actually thinks that we forgot how to secure our border. No one. Now that President Trump has done this and announced mass deportations and you have people self-deporting in record numbers, we've seen the lowest border encounters in our history. Well, not our history, but in our recent history. No one actually thought, figurehead Biden, and rather the people who ran him, were trying to secure the border. No one. But they put on the play, and the Mockingbird media participated in the play. So we got to watch, inside the Oval Office, actual diplomacy. And we got to watch the dictator of Ukraine step in it, frankly. It's important to remember his background and how he qualified to be the dictator of Ukraine. He was a successful comedian. No, that's it. Full stop. one of his last roles in a television show that was produced by one of the richest men in Ukraine. He played a president in a sitcom. I've heard people criticize President Trump for pointing out that Zelensky walked into the White House in his war costume. Couldn't get a suit. And I've heard the left say, well, Elon Musk doesn't wear suits. No, and Elon Musk is not the leader of a country. He is not here asking us for $300, $400, $500 billion more dollars. He's making an attempt to save us money. Zelensky is here asking for that. He is the leader, I would say the dictator of Ukraine, and there's plenty of ways to qualify dictator. So for all the pretend hand-wringing out of Washington, D.C., see it for what it is. It's also playmaking. You can't work in Washington, D.C. and have not seen meetings like this. You can't work in Washington, D.C. for any length of time and not be aware that within whatever you're working on, say it's the NRSC or in my case, the Republican National Committee, of all the backstabbing that's going on, that you can't work in Washington, D.C. and not sit in a leadership meeting and know that there are two or three people in that meeting who are trying to knife each other. That's the culture. That's the culture. It is a mendacious, greedy, avaricious culture of people who are seeking to be served rather than serve. And that's where President Trump finds himself. That's where J.D. Vance finds himself. So afterwards, I got a lot of emails from people who have listened to me on the radio or watched me for a very long time, writing to me, many of them committed Trump supporters. Guy who calls himself Beef Wellington. I've never met Beef, but he's been with me for a decade. I've never seen him more panicked. He wrote in and said, that's it. It's over for Trump. He's lost the independence. Well, no. In fact, Zelensky's approval rating plummeted, and about 72% of Americans agree with how President Trump and J.D. Vance handled the situation. One American in particular that was surprising, and that's Lindsey Graham.
I met with Zelensky this morning. I urged him to stay on message, be grateful, be thankful. We'll talk about details of security guarantees later. Keep it upbeat, keep it positive. It was absolute, utter disaster. The question for me is he redeemable in the eyes of Americans? Most Americans witnessing what they saw today would not want Zelensky to be their business partner, including me, and I've been to Ukraine 9 times since the war started. I met with him this morning. President Trump, I talked to last night, he was upbeat about the deal. I've never been more proud of President Trump for showing the American people and the world, you don't trifle with this man.
That should be clear. One of President Trump's great advantages as president is he is unpredictable to Foggy Bottom, which is the nickname for the State Department. The State Department's been putting on acts for years. Good old-fashioned dramas for us. Our dear, dear friends across the pond, right? Keir Starmer came into the White House. He also received some truth to his face. You're killing free speech. It's going to be hard for us to support you while you're doing this. And it was up to Keir Starmer now. There are people saying he's now the leader of the free world. By some counts, Keir Starmer's UK has more admirals than it does battleships. It's not possible for them to lead an attack. We pay 70% of the bills of NATO. 70%. NATO can't function without us. Now, that sounds very, very prideful. So let me recognize that we have this through God's great mercy. And with that, we have a huge responsibility as a nation to whom much is given, much is expected. That's what we're told by the Lord. So we're expected to help the least of these. And I think we're also expected to do everything we can to stop bloody wars. And that's what President Trump was doing. The dictator of Ukraine, Zelensky, was asked about that response by Lindsey Graham on Fox News, where Lindsey Graham made those remarks.
Senator Lindsey Graham, Republican from South Carolina, he has been a big proponent of you and of Ukraine, said this today after the meeting.
I have never been more proud of the president. I was very proud of J.D. Vance standing up for our country. We want to be helpful. What I saw in the Oval Office was disrespectful, and I don't know if we can ever do business with Zelensky again. He either needs to resign and send somebody over that we can do business with, or he needs to change.
So he says you need to consider resigning. Is that on the table?
I don't know if he will be happy after my words. This decision can do only people of Ukraine.
You're not going to step down to do a peace deal?
No, I was always ready. I'm not sure that is a good idea for such proposals. But anyway, I always said if United States will support NATO, so I think that is enough for Ukraine. So I think I did all I had to do. And if somebody is not happy with me, okay.
The body language, I know you can't see that on the radio, but the body language is a man who knows he is pressed against the wall. The act is over. He's there because of us. See, this is part of the drama that they perform for us, the world bosses. We're all going through this, and no one's really willing to say in the Mockingbird media realm that we put him in that position. When Victoria Nuland and Barack Obama instituted a coup, we put him there. Not Zelensky. We named another so-called president. But Zelensky is a follow-on puppet. And part of the drama for us has been that we didn't cause this to happen. That's what's been acted out for us. So I have an unpopular opinion here among conservatives. We owe the people of Ukraine something, since we're the ones who started this war. I think we've fulfilled that obligation as best we can. Now, I think it's up to the people of Ukraine to usher Zelensky out of office. And there is, in fact, a movement for a recall petition, although he has, of course, canceled elections. He's on the sixth year of his five-year term. He has destroyed all media, save one official channel, but there are still independent journalists operating on platforms that they haven't yet shut down, and they are filming people being conscripted. That wasn't made up. What J.D. Vance said, that wasn't made up. This is one of the many videos going around by actual independent journalists in Ukraine. It's simply a young man walking his dog when a van pulls up and they chase him. And he's screaming. They're uniformed soldiers. And they pick him up and they drag him. His feet are on the ground, on the roads, still holding his dog by his leash. And they're dragging him towards a black van. And in a moment, you'll hear his reaction when he knows he's being sent to the front. And I know, I had the same question. How do I know those are not police officers arresting him? According to the independent journalists in Ukraine, those are conscriptionists, or as they say euphemistically and ironically, sarcastically, recruiters. That's who we're backing. That's also real. J.D. Vance was right to mention that to Zelensky's face. We need to get out of this. He must be forced to settle. He must be forced to accept peace. And we need to stop it with this regime toppling. God is a God of order, not chaos. I don't think God can sponsor us or bless us going around destroying other countries. We'll come back under Disciples View. Appreciate you listening to Disciples View. I'm Todd Herman. Coming up, we'll get to the Tower of Babbling, a personal note, and Jake Tapper. Oh, Lord God, please help Jake Tapper. The dishonesty of the Mockingbird media in this country is so, oh gosh, how many words, adjectives can we use? Blatant, gross, predominating, obvious, ungodly, and sad. They honestly don't think that we see this. Maybe I should just do the Jake Tapper stuff now, but let's be in the world, not of it together. There is a bill in the separate country of Washington State that has some decent language in it, but you have to understand the separate country of Washington State to understand the details. My friend Mark Harmsworth wrote a piece about this. It's called Senate Bill 5708, and it would create ways to prevent kids from getting addicted to social media. And it says its aim is to protect minors by regulating, quote, addictive feeds and addictive internet-based services. It would require online platforms to estimate user age, apply privacy protections, and obtain parental consent for notifications. The bill would restrict data collection on identified minors, but takes the first step in reducing parental oversight by parents by restricting some types of data from a minor's social media account. So to be clear, it's not about limiting access to minors' addictive feeds. It's about limiting parents' ability to monitor their kids' use of social media. So the way they're pitching this is they're going to get kids that are no longer addicted to social media. Well, the bill means government can do that to social media platforms. Huh. I wonder, which platforms will they target? Do you think it might be Twitter-X? Yes. Winner, winner, chicken dinner. You're right. It will be. Do you think they might let YouTube continue to push the lies of transgenderism, the lies about the COVID shots? My bet is yes. And I think they'll let TikTok continue to do what TikTok does in this country. But I think they'll use it to try to cripple Twitter in the separate country of Washington State. The bill 5708 would force social media platforms to alert children in an obvious way children could not ignore if their parents are monitoring their social media feeds. As a parent whose daughter was propelled in her eating disorder or order and body dysmorphia through a cell phone that a girlfriend gave her, an unlocked cell phone that we didn't know about, I can tell you, I want to be able to monitor my kids' platforms. This bill would tell kids, hey, your folks are watching. The separate country of Washington is a state that hates parental rights, and they're doing everything they can to create a Generation Zero. Generation Zero meaning that they are the first generation to not have parents. And if you know anything about Maoist revolutions, you'll be familiar with the phrase Year Zero. Chairman Mao's vision was to start history over again. That nothing before existed. That's why he went down tearing down institutions. That's why he captured academics, punished them. They did the same thing in Cambodia under the Khmer Rouge. They took kids and had them punish their parents. And they had kids putting dunce caps on academics in Mao's China and beating up professors and shaming them because the kids were smarter because they were from Year Zero. In the separate country of Washington State and California and Oregon and Illinois and many of the other fallen states, New York, Year Zero is sexual. It's fleshly. And parents are just too stupid to understand it. But it's the same tactic the devil has fashioned many, many times through people like Mao and through the Cambodian Revolution. And it's to separate families because Satan hates the family unit. The family unit is what, of course, we're called, first of all, after our abiding relationship with God, It's to be with our families, leaders of our families spiritually, particularly fathers. And that just simply comes from the book of Ephesians. It's not me. It's the book of Ephesians. So we see these tools going around the country and, frankly, around the world, controlling speech on one hand and then allowing it on another, but only the good types of speech. I mentioned in the first segment today that Keir Starmer made a fool of himself in the White House with J.D. Vance when the vice president approached him about freedom of speech and the fact that the UK is shutting it down, that it's at risk. And Keir Starmer pretended that it wasn't. We've had free speech for many, many years. Yeah, you used to. And there's still some people who get away with speaking. But there's also people who get that knock on the door from police officers and psychiatric nurses who are concerned with you because you have questions about immigration policies. And sometimes those questions end in arrests. There was the very famous case, and I guess I could try to find the audio, of a very autistic girl who referred to a police officer who was a man pretending to be a woman, that the very autistic little girl said, "You're a man." And of course they had to arrest her, even as terrified as she was, hiding in a closet in her home. I mean, you can't go around misgendering people. There's the infamous case of a woman who was in court, and she had been sexually assaulted. She'd been raped. And during the court appearance, this woman, the victim, was being questioned. And she had the audacity to say a man raped her. Well, the judge excoriated her. She was in serious trouble because the man who raped her is actually a woman. And it extends into prayer. Gillian Audrey McKay is a Scottish Green politician. And she's been with the member of the Scottish Parliament since, I think, 2021. Yep, 2021. And this is for the central region of Scotland. Incidentally, she's Green Party. First ever Green Party member to serve in Scottish Parliament. She was asked if praying by a window in your home could be a crime under the buffer zone laws.
What about the accusation that the even private prayer within your own home could amount to breaking the law? I mean, it's stretching it, but it's not wrong, is it?
It's absolute nonsense.
Is it? I'm looking at a letter that the government sent to householders.
Nowhere in it does it say private prayer.
No, but what it does say is that the activities in a private place like a house in these zones could be an offence if they can be seen or heard within the zone and are done intentionally or recklessly. Now, if you're telling me that prayer can be an offence outside a clinic, if you're inside your own house in that zone, theoretically, the law could be applied to you, couldn't it? I'm just trying to work out if there's any way in which J.D. Vance could be right.
I should be really clear. Praying in of itself is not an offence under this bill. We are not banning prayer under the Act.
Performative prayer. If you're standing at a window with your hands together in front of your face in that classic kind of, you know, that classic image of prayer. If you're standing at a window so people can see you, then could it be interpreted as an offence?
That then depends on who's passing the window and whether anybody can actually...
So he's not wrong, is he, J.D. Vance?
No,
he's not wrong.
He is wrong, because if... I don't know anyone that can pray loudly or performatively enough to be seen from outside their own house.
But if someone saw you, then you can be in trouble. That's what she's saying. J.D. Vance is right. I've read the letter. It says if someone hears you or sees you praying in your house, you're in trouble, because we can't have people going around praying in their houses and being seen by others. Keep that dark, disgusting practice of praying to the Lord to yourself. So this extends, of course, across the ocean. No, it does, because Satan, of course, is the king of this. He's the prince of the air, all the air, our air as well as theirs. And President Trump has appointed a woman to lead his faith office in the White House, a woman who has apparently some would say stolen, the husbands of two other women. She's had multiple marriages. And I don't want to sit here and bear false witness. I just want to be clear about what President Trump, how he's being led spiritually. A guy named Casey Buttner is the pastor of Beulah Baptist in Florida. And he's had some interactions with Paula White. He shared some of those interactions.
Paula White's a false shepherd for sure, but at the same time, she neglects the flock. She's never here. The sign is in terrible shape. There's large buildings behind me here, but this flock is not a true church, and they're operating without a shepherd. And Paula somehow has equipped perhaps her son to try and speak, certainly not a preacher. So nevertheless, it's in bad shape, and Apopka is the town here in Central Florida for which we are in, and the people here at this church could use prayer and clarity as well. So I appreciate you being bold enough to speak clarity. I wish our nation had a true pastor for a spiritual advisor to our President Trump, but nevertheless, perhaps this is a continuation upon God's judgment upon America for the atrocities for which we've been engaged in for decades by appointing a false shepherd as the spiritual leader. And at the end of the day, I recognize as well as you do that God appoints these people. Daniel chapter 2 verses 20 and 21, he appoints these people. And at the end of the day, he loves those who love him, Romans 8:28. So I just thought I would share a couple thoughts on my mind as I pass by here on the way to Beulah Baptist Church to do my absolute best to be a true shepherd to the flock and preach the true word. I appreciate you, Justin. Take care, brother. Bye.
And by the way, he was posting that to the social media account of Justin Peters. And Justin is describes himself as an evangelist and a preacher and has a guy with a good big audience. He also writes at The Blaze. And he wrote an article about Paula White at TheBlaze.com. And I don't know that this is God's judgment. I know that God has allowed Paula White to be in this position. We played some audio of her last week on the stage with her husband, Jonathan Cain, who had been with the band Journey, one of her many husbands. And Jonathan Cain had advice for women in the audience to watch pornography with their husbands, to watch fornication. And Paula White laughed and laughed and laughed. And then later put out a statement saying that she and her husband don't watch porn together, and her husband's not suggesting that women go outside their marriage or the husband go outside their marriage to seek satisfaction in flesh. But she didn't say it was wrong to say it. One other thing from Casey Buttner, who was describing some of his interactions with Paula White, who leads the faith office for President Trump.
I have gotten curious in times past when Paula White has had some huge faith healing services and attended one just out of curiosity. And so I remember your personal testimony and how you went early on and were also curious about being healed with hope and were pushed to the side and treated terribly. I saw that personally there at Paula White's fiasco. I saw those who were coming in with hope and wheelchairs pushed to the side. And then I saw the show right there front and center in front of the stage and actually saw Paula White rear back and punch a guy right in his stomach, casting out a demon. Completely fake, completely falsified. And so nevertheless, what a fiasco, what a show. What a charlatan she is. And I've seen it with my own eyes, especially as that, you know, so-called church is only a mile away from my house. But anyway, thought I'd let you know that, man, I've seen that with my own eyes. And I remember when you and I were going to go evangelizing in the parking lot one time when you were down here preaching at our church. But anyhow, your article was well done, sir. Take care and have a great day.
And he's commenting on Justin Peters' article in The Blaze. Now, I don't know Paula White, and perhaps Randy, maybe there's somebody here who knows her at AFR, and I think we owe it to her to invite her on the program because we've talked about her multiple times. So maybe we could reach out and ask her to come on. And I don't think anything in her personal life is a particular secret. And I know I've got elements of my personal life that have been a mess. I mean, gosh, you know, sometimes people have been uncomfortable with me for being as open as I am sometimes on the show. There's been people who've criticized me for admitting that I went to a deliverance pastor. I'm not the least bit ashamed of that. Our mental health is a lot like our spiritual health, and sometimes they need help. And there's been some times that people have been critical of me of talking about how in the church that men need to be more open about sexual sin and sexual temptation. In fact, all of us do. I believe we've created stumbling blocks for same-sex attracted people because they know human nature is human nature, that all of us struggle, and yet somehow we've made same-sex activity into a special sin. So I've been open about that. So we should probably reach out to Paula White. And I think we should also very much pray for President Trump, that President Trump choose Jesus Christ and the Spirit of the Lord and the Holy Spirit, against which he measures all spirits, not Paula White. And particularly not her, given what we've learned. So, Randy, let's please reach out to see if we can get Paula White on the program. I do think we owe it to her. We'll come back with the Tower Babbling and a personal note. I'm Todd Herman. This is The Disciples' View. Appreciate you listening to Disciples View. We'll wrap the show up today with a personal note and also get to the Tower Babbling. It's a busy day, so let's begin here. Savannah Hernandez is a young woman who does reporting for Turning Points USA. She's one of the fearless young people who goes out into riots and veritable war zones within America, and often on her own, sometimes with a camera crew. And she has the uncanny ability to find out where people like Jake Tapper are going to be. Sometimes it's obvious. There's big events are going to be there, but she has the ability to track them down. And I'm talking about Jake, but Jake Tapper's written the book called Original Sin. And it's about Joe Biden's decline and the cover-up and his disastrous decision to not run again. His decline and the cover-up. Jake Tapper is writing a book about the cover-up of the decline mentally of Joe Biden. Yes, this Jake Tapper.
How do you think it makes little kids with stutters feel when they see you make a comment like that?
First and foremost, I had no idea that Joe Biden ever suffered from a stutter. I think what we see on stage with Joe Biden, Jake, is very clearly a cognitive decline. Okay. That's what I'm referring to. It makes me uncomfortable.
It's so amazing. It's so amazing to me
and try and figure out an answer.
A cognitive decline.
Well, when you're trying to tell me that what I was suggesting was
I think
stuttering,
that you were mocking his stutter. I think you were mocking his stutter, and I think you have absolutely no standing to diagnose somebody's cognitive decline. I would think that somebody in the Trump family would be more sensensive to people who do not have medical licenses diagnosing politicians from afar. Plenty of people have diagnosed your father from afar, and I'm sure it offends you, your father-in-law from afar, I'm sure it offends you. You don't have any standing to say...
I'm not diagnosing him. What I'm saying, Jake,
you just talked about a cognitive decline.
I have one last question for you, Laura. And it's very concerning to a lot of people that this could be the leader of the free world.
Okay.
So I mentioned Savannah Hernandez. I'll get to that in a second. That's Jake Tapper pretending that Joe Biden stutters. Because never in the history of Joe Biden's public life was there mentioning of stuttering. Not once until his dementia and/or Alzheimer's and/or Parkinson's disease became impossible for them to ignore during that debate. Jake Tapper gets to go to Penguin Press and write a book about this, about the cover-up. Is it going to be a confessional? I don't think so, because it also features a writer from Axios, where that was also covered up. Jake Tapper had a chance to talk about this to admit his role in this when Savannah Hernandez approached him.
I'm here with CNN. I can't get very close to them because their security guard is blocking me. But we've got Jake Tapper here. We've got Chris Wallace. We also have Dana Bash. Now, I've been asking them why they have been lying to the American public about the mental decline of Joe Biden.
None of you guys would like to respond to that at all? No? Dana, you're a very respected journalist. Jake, not so much respected, but people listen to you still. Would any of you guys like to respond to Joe Biden's cognitive decline and why you guys lied to the American people about...
No, and of course they didn't want to respond. I conclude, my opinion, they knew exactly what they're doing, and now they're going to try to clean it up as if Jake Tapper is still a journalist. And I pray, I do, I pray for Jake Tapper. I met him once before he became corrupt, and he was A, genuinely nice, B, genuinely humble, and C, I had never seen a sign of ideology when he was at ABC News. Now, I just feel like he's totally sold his soul. So, of course, I pray for him. On this program, we thank the Lord for placing supposedly wise people like Jake Tapper on tall towers of shaking sand with our feature called The Tower of Babbling.
You know about the biblical truth of the Tower of Babel. A Disciple's View presents...
America is a nation that can be defined in a single word. I was going to put him...
The Tower of Babbling.
Three soundbites in today's Tower Babbling. Chuck Schumer talking about Doge and Elon Musk.
9/11 families deserve to be treated with dignity, with respect, not with the contempt we see from Doge. And no good business operator would take the slash and burn approach Doge is taking. People's Social Security benefits are also at risk. Their ability to see a doctor is at stake. Their ability to put kids in daycare is at stake. The longer Doge is allowed to rain chaos on the American people, the stronger the backlash will become.
72% of Democrats support Doge. They're not raining chaos. They've made some mistakes because they're moving very, very quickly. And in fact, any business that had this level of debt that was this, well, any business with this level of debt would already been pushed into bankruptcy. And in fact, Elon Musk went through Twitter and did a mass clean out of employees when he bought it. Just the same way he's doing now to about 1% of the federal workforce, if that. Next story in today's Tower Babbling. Representative Jasmine Crockett in Congress is someone assigned to go on the TV and to say ridiculous things. That is her role. She has no other meaningful role in Congress. She's never written any meaningful legislation, and I don't think she ever will. Jasmine Crockett.
Instead, we're pushing conspiracy theories, and some of them are killing people. It's the same thing that we have coming out of Doge. It's the reason that people are dying. It's the reason that farmers are losing their farms, because we continue to peddle conspiracy theories.
So Social Security benefits haven't been cut at all, Chuck Schumer. That's not true. Elon Musk doesn't have the ability to cut Social Security benefits. He has the ability to identify people who are 150 years old and don't exist and to cut the checks going to whoever those people really are. And no, Jasmine Crockett, Doge isn't creating any conspiracy theories that are killing people. The conspiracy theories that kill people come from government. It puts the needle in its skin if it wants to eat again. Last soundbite in today's Tower Babbling. Jim Comey sure does have a memory problem, doesn't he?
Did Mr. Page deny knowing people that you accuse him of having contact with?
I don't remember. That's about all I recall. I don't remember. I don't remember learning anything additional about Steele's sources. Not that I recall, no. I don't remember Bruce Orr ever briefing me. I don't recall that.
So do you recall?
I do not.
Do you recall?
I do not. I don't remember any discussion. I don't remember using that word, but I don't remember using that word. I don't remember ever being informed. I don't recall being informed of that.
So funny, because when he was recently interviewed by one of the Mockingbird media members, he was bragging about knowing all the details of what he did to try to trap General Flynn into a perjury trap. And he sent two guys over there. That failed because they came back and said, we don't think he's lying. We see no signs of deception. So then Peter Strzok, who'd been actively cheating on his wife, got involved, and he went over to see if he could get him to lie. And Comey remembered those details. And that's a wrap for today's Tower of Babbling.
That was the Tower of Babbling.
Whoa! That is news.
On a Disciple's View.
Often during this segment, I share something that's deeply, deeply personal about me, my family, pain I've suffered. Today, it's a little bit different. On a personal note today, I remember the first time I was excoriated by someone in the news media for being anti-content. This happened back in the day when I worked at Microsoft, and I was, well, in fact, no, I wasn't yet at Microsoft. I was at a separate division called MSNBC. Did you know that? I used to work at MSNBC. And this is before MSNBC became the embarrassment that it is. Obviously, I wouldn't have worked there. I couldn't have, as a conservative and as a Christian, a formative Christian at that point, not disciple, but getting there. So this was back when it was pretty much a straight news organization, and it did a pretty good job. And I had a meeting with the management team from MSNBC where I was presenting trends in technology and how people were using technology and what our new video service was going to do and where MSNBC would be within that video service and how it was clip-based and why it was clip-based and why we weren't doing full programming and why we weren't charging money for subscriptions. And in that discussion, I kept mentioning the control consumers wanted. Control, condensed, combined, we called it. They want to control what they see. They want to control how long a version of it they see. And they don't really care if it comes from MSNBC or CNN because they don't see a big difference. I remember at the time, the president of MSNBC said, "Man, you're awfully anti-content." I had to tell him, "Oh my goodness. Oh, quite the contrary. I used to be a talk radio host." This is back in the day when that was true, where I used to be one. "Oh my gosh, no. No, I love your business. I love what you call content. I love storytelling. I love great news stories." "Oh my goodness. I'm sorry if that came across that way." And I remember the next many, many times I was called anti-content. And then the attacks got worse. When I came back into media and got back into talk radio, I remember having a conversation with a guy who had worked at the very, very high levels of ABC News. And he wrote me a Facebook note. And he said, "You lied to us the entire time you worked with us. You've always been a Nazi." And I remember writing back to him and saying, "I've always been the same person. The guy you tried to hire. You tried to hire me away from Microsoft. You offered me a bunch of money to move to New York. We had dinners together. And I'm a Nazi? What are the signs of my Nazi-dom?" And his response was, "You back Republicans. Republicans are Nazis." Okay. Let that one go. But his reply to me was right back to where it all began. "You've always hated news media. You were just making money off of us. I'm glad you never came to work here because you hate what we do." Well, that's not true. And that guy was he was in the content business. He was one of the big time people in news content production. It's never been true. In fact, I can remember the first time I was in New York City going to the Associated Press building. I remember walking up to it. And I have a picture somewhere of me touching it. Back in the day, the cell phone cameras were so bad. I remember emailing my wife saying, "You will not believe what I'm touching." I remember walking inside and seeing the pictures of the historic headlines. And I remember being just shaken to stand there and see these world events covered by journalists. I was well aware of the problems in journalism. I was well aware of the fake stories about the Soviet Union and, you know, there's no starvation in Ukraine. I knew about that. But I also knew that there were really hardworking people in journalism who put their lives at risk to tell stories. I had the same feeling when I stood outside the New York Times. I was aware that they were a liberal publication, completely biased. First time I got to go inside the building at the New York Times. And to show their business reporter how utterly biased one of their pieces was, I was thrilled when he agreed. He actually sent notes to his colleagues saying, we have to edit this now. This man is right. This is completely biased. We made this up. That's when I was running Spin Spotter, a startup that won a lot of tech awards, but was just way too early. So the point of the personal note is this. Can you love a friend of yours who goes completely off the rails? I can. Can you love a family member who goes completely off the rails? I can. I love the news business, which is off the rails. It's no longer just bias. It's now rigging elections and doing the work of the intelligence services to destroy, divide, and destroy our country. And I still love news and good news storytelling. I was recently listening to a podcast by one of my favorite preachers, pastor, and he made the point that if you're aware of a loved one, even a loved one you haven't spoken with in a while, who has moved away from God and is living adverse to God, that one of the things you should pray for is pain in their life. Pray for pain. The sort of pain that would cause them to come back to the Lord. That's a tough prayer. I recently prayed it for somebody. Somebody I deeply, deeply love. And will probably never see again. And I prayed that, but also said, make it righteous pain. Please protect the children. But if it's pain that's required to draw this person back to the Lord, then please do it. In the beginning was the Word is with God, the Word was God. Because we believe, we speak. Because He first loved us, we speak His Word. We walk in the path of Jesus Christ to make disciples of all nations, till God gives us permission to speak again together. May His peace, which transcends all understanding, wash over you and your families. I'm Todd Herman. This has been A Disciple's View. Do you love